You know what can happen? You go to these multi-theater multiplexes, you know, with a jillion screens. You pay your money, you get your popcorn, you got your Coke, and you got your Jujubes, and you got all your Junior Mints and all. You got everything, you go in there, and you took a left turn when you should have taken a right turn. You went into theater, whatever, instead of the theater you were supposed to. And then, ooh, the movie has started. I must have gotten a little bit late. And you nestle into a chair, and you're watching the screen, and you're like, what is going on here? You didn't know it, but you walked into a movie that was almost completed. Perhaps even the last few minutes. And you're watching characters talk and behave themselves, and then the whole crowd starts laughing, and you're all, why are they laughing? I saw the whole crowd weeps or cries, woo-hoo, and doesn't affect you. Ever had that experience? Nobody's had that. And it's really bad when you say, I'm going to stick this out because I'm not going to get up again. So you endure the rest of the movie. Well, it can happen. And what you experienced was you walked in on the last part of a movie. The rest of the audience has been there from the beginning. And they know what this character is about and what's going on here and the dynamic between these two characters and so on. They're into the story. But if you walked in late to the film, you see the same character as everybody else does, but the significance of their actions, you know, escapes you. We all walked in on the last part of the movie called Humankind on Planet Earth. And if you have been watching some things take place or transpire on your TV or, again, your mobile communication device, whatever it is these days, and you are watching the saber rattling going on with Iran there, threatening to close the Straits of Hormuz. And you're seeing, if you've been watching, that the European community, that whole European Union zone, the 27 nations, are struggling financially. How many of you have heard something about that? Greece is in trouble. Then Italy is in trouble. And now the biggest economy there, Germany, is struggling with the euro. How many of you know that the entire 27 nations, aside from a few, all have one single currency called the euro? How many of you knew that? How many of you knew that that's a relatively new advancement? That before that, the Germans had the marks, the French had the francs, and the British had sterling, pound, silver. But now they're all on one single currency. But if you understand and know what the history is, I'm going to paint a backdrop of where we are in time. Loosely stated, well, how late is it? Join me in Daniel chapter 9 and let me show you what I'm talking about. You know, everybody's been saying the end of the world, the end of the world. I've seen the guy with the sandwich board. My grandmother was saying we thought it was the end of the world when Hitler was doing what he was doing. And even further than that, when the characters of World War I, it's the end of the world. Well, is it? And so many of us, we look at that and we say, well, you see, it's only nut jobs and wackadoodles that really plug their heads into that stuff. Well, let me show you something. In the next couple weeks, next Sunday, perhaps the Sunday after that, I'm going to be showing you some interesting current events that have been taking place that are really quite startling if you know sort of where they fit on the prophetic time clock. And we have to set the background in Daniel chapter 9. Would you join me in verse 24? What's happening in Daniel? Daniel wrote approximately about 600 or so B.C., thereabouts. And where was Daniel when he wrote his book? He was in Babylon. Now, Babylon had its capital named Babylon. Anybody know where the physical city-state of Babylon was located in our current map? That's right, Iraq. In fact, not too far from where Baghdad is today. So that region of the world has a rich and long-lasting history. Well, Daniel was a Jewish young man. When he was a young man, about the year 606 BC, God had been telling the nation of Israel, Israel, what are you doing? You're loving these idols, and pretty soon you're doing everything that I told you not to do. And you're not doing the things that I asked you to do because you're chasing after all of these false gods. And so he gave them prophet after prophet after prophet to try to get their act together. And finally, Jeremiah shows up, who was a little in front of Daniel. And Jeremiah said, that's it. God says he gave you every opportunity. Now here's what's going to happen. God is going to bring a nation, and he actually gives some very amazing descriptions of what this nation would be. God is going to allow them to take hold and really sort of defeat the nation of Israel. Well, that happened in the year 606 BC. A fellow by the name of Nebuchadnezzar, and he was the king of the nation of Babylon. He was going after, really, the Egyptian pharaoh, a fellow by the name of Necho, and he defeated Pharaoh Necho at the Battle of Carchemish. And so the remnants of Pharaoh's army are running back, tails between their legs, back to Egypt, and chasing them are the armies of Nebuchadnezzar. Well, he stops off here in Jerusalem. He lays siege to it, defeats the city. And then there is a deportation of many of the best and the brightest of the Jews back some 700 miles east, all the way back to Babylon. He installs a Jewish king there in Jerusalem, but this Jewish king would be a puppet king, a vassal king, and had better do everything that King Nebuchadnezzar says. Well, the second king does so for a while, but then he gets to listening to the false prophets there again in Jerusalem. You should throw off this Babylonian yoke, etc., etc. So he does. He leads a rebellion. And then Nebuchadnezzar comes back the second time, defeats the city again, deports another group of people the second time, and again places a vassal Jewish king in the place to sort of run the phone lines and the railroads and all that kind of stuff. This second vassal king also starts listening to the false prophets again. And the third time, Nebuchadnezzar comes back and he says, that's it, I'm done. He destroys Jerusalem on a very sad day in Jewish history, the 9th of Av. So the first siege was in 606 BC, and roughly 19 or so years later, Jerusalem is destroyed. Now with that as a backdrop, let's get into Daniel chapter 9, what's happening here. Daniel read his Bible, and he knew that Jeremiah said that Israel would only be in captivity there in Babylon for 70 years. So now 70 years have transpired. Daniel was taken in that first siege as a teenager, very likely, and now he's probably a 90, even a 100-year-old fella. And he's been watching and keeping track. 70 years we've been here, the time is up. Lord, now what's going to happen to our nation of Israel? And here's what happens. An angel shows up and says, verse 24, all right, Daniel, good question. You are right. You've been in your Bible. You know 70 years are up. Here's what's going to happen. Verse 24, 70 weeks. You might want to circle that. That's the Hebrew word Shabuah, and it means sevens. So not weeks literally like Monday through Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but weeks of years. 70 weeks of years are determined for your people, who is Daniel's people, the Jews, and for your holy city. Who is that talking about? Fernley. No, it's not. It's not talking about Fernley. It's talking about Jerusalem. 70 weeks of years, or if you will, can you see where we get 490 years? So 70 weeks total are for your people, the Jews, and your holy city. Now what will happen through the duration of these 70 years? To finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, to make a reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up or to complete visions and prophecy, and to anoint the Most Holy. Now, in Daniel's Jewish understanding, who is the Most Holy? This would be the Messiah, We know him looking back in retrospect. That's Jesus. Now verse 25. Now know therefore and understand. You really should have that verse highlighted in your scriptures. Why? Because end times Bible prophecy is not hard. It's not esoteric and only the upper crust of the theological intelligentsia can get it. Look what it says here. I want you to know and therefore and understand. That invitation was obviously extended to Daniel, but to who else? Us. I've said it before kind of like this. You bring home your box of 500-piece puzzle. So you undo the box and then you dump the 500 pieces on your table. What are the first four pieces you always look for? The corners. You guys have done this before, I can tell. So you find the corners. Is that important? Yes, it is. Then what are the next pieces you always look for? The edges, the one with a straight edge. And pretty soon you've got the edge, corner, and edge. And now you have established the framework of your puzzle. When it's in a big pile of 500 little tiny baby pieces, it looks a little strange. It starts to go together and make sense if you apply a proper framework around it. And the reason I say that is lots of books out there, lots of whack jobs out there trying to say, I know what end times Bible prophecy looks like. And the reason they mess it up, in my opinion, is because they don't understand that God gave us the outline. And here it is. 70 weeks total. Know, therefore, and understand everybody and anybody that from the going forth of the command to restore and build Jerusalem, Messiah the Prince comes, there shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. So 7 plus 62 equals what? 69. Now, how many weeks total? 70 total. He says, I'm going to give you a very definite beginning of the stopwatch. It's going to be a decree to go and rebuild Jerusalem specifically. And from that decree, it's going to be 69 Shavua, or 69 sevens, or 483 years until Messiah is rejected as Messiah. Also, I got to let you know, too, that the Jewish calendar, even to this day, is predicated on the lunar calendar. So what was our Julian calendar and then ultimately our Gregorian calendar that we have today is predicated not on the lunar cycle, but on the solar sidereal cycle, or the earth moving around the sun. In the days of Daniel, did you know that all of the calendars, the Assyrians, the Egyptians, the Persians, the Phoenicians, the Mayans, the Carthaginians, the Greeks, the Chinese, the Hindus, the Etruscans, the Chaldeans, and the Hebrews, all ancient calendars had a 360-day year. How many of you didn't know that? Hasn't it always been 365 and a quarter? Huh. Something happened in the year 701 B.C., and all of the calendars had to make adjustments because of it. You want me to tell you what it is? You'll have to come back next week. The Jews' prophetic calendar is predicated, like many of the ancient cultures, on a 360-day year. 70 weeks total, or 490 years. But there's going to be a definite beginning. The stopwatch will begin when a decree is given for the Jews to rebuild Jerusalem specifically. Then it's going to be 69 of those weeks until something happens. Messiah is rejected. And because that's 483 years predicated on a 360-day calendar, literally look at this very specific prophecy. God is saying this, Daniel, through the angel, heads up, watch. It's going to be 173,880 days from a decree until Messiah is rejected. No other book of antiquity, no other work of religion has this kind of prophecy. There was a fella at the turn of last century. His name was Sir Robert Anderson. He saw this and saw that as a definite sort of, hey, wait a minute, I could go dig up in the history books and find about these decrees. And then, this was before computers, at the turn between the 1800s and the 1900s, he went to his buddies at the London Observatory, and they got their charts out, and they literally accounted for every single literal 24-hour period. In other words, they made up for all of the leap years and leap centuries and all the kind of stuff. And they literally said 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and they came up with 173,800. Back to verse 25. Know, therefore, and understand that from the going forth of the command to restore and build Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there shall be 7 sevens and 62 sevens. What does that equal? 69. Now, what's going to happen? The street shall be built again, and the wall, even in troublesome times. And then after the 62 weeks, that's a Jewish sort of reckoning of time. You see the 7 plus the 62? What he's really saying is, at the end of the 69th week, Messiah will be cut off. And it's the Hebrew word karat, which means he will be killed for a capital offense. But not for himself. He's going to be killed for a capital offense that he did not commit. And the people of the prince who is to come, there are 33 titles of the Antichrist in the Old Testament, 13 titles in the New. This is one of the 33 monikers or descriptions of the Antichrist, the prince of the people who is to come. Jesus did present himself as an option to be Messiah of Israel, didn't he? What was the general reception of the nation as a whole? They rejected him. Then he was put on a cross by what governing authority? The Romans. Now, the Jews at that time had their own sort of laws that they abide by, but what superseded all Jewish laws and customs would be the Roman law, Roman understanding. In fact, the Romans took away from the Jews their right for capital punishment. They're saying that's not your job, that's our job as the imperial state, which really is your authority. And so when the Jews tried to kill Jesus, did you notice? They couldn't kill him or put him to death by themselves. Who did they need the permission of? The Roman governor, a fellow by the name of Pontius Pilate. The people of the prince who is to come, who was the people ruling in that region? It would be the Romans. Here is one of the hints that the Antichrist will be from a geographical area that we know as the Roman Empire. So lay a map of the Roman Empire of that day, laid over our modern world today, and the Bible says very specifically the Antichrist will come out of that geographical region. Now, you and I both know we're all, well, there's no Rome today. Don't miss next week. We're going to talk about that. The Bible prophesied very specifically that Rome would never be destroyed. It would fade. And then at just the right time, God would see to it that it would begin to bud and grow again. I'll give you a hint. No, I won't. You're going to have to come next week. And the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. In 70 AD, did the Romans lay siege to and destroy the city of Jerusalem the second time? What's the answer? Absolutely. Again, who were the people that destroyed the city of Jerusalem and the sanctuary, interestingly enough, again on the same day, the 9th of Av? It was the Romans. One of the clues of who the identity of the Antichrist will be, he will be from the geographic region of the Roman Empire. I guess that rules out Mickey Mouse. And the end of it shall be with a flood. Very interesting word. When Jerusalem is destroyed, is prophesying Daniel, 600 years before Jesus was born. When this happens, that is the Hebrew word, shitef, and it means to pour out. When the Jews were defeated by the Romans, many of them were killed. Was there a flood that basically the Jews left that region in a great big hurry? What's the answer? And also, this word, Hebrew word shetef, is going to be one of the basis words for another word you might be more familiar with, diaspora. What happened to the nation of Israel in 70 AD? They were destroyed ultimately and completely. And then where did the Jews, were they automatically just snuffed out of the face of the earth? No. What happened was, is they fled. And they fled to Romania, to Europe, to Africa, and to ultimately even the United States. What's mostly amazing about that is, imagine if the Romans came and took over America. Probably wouldn't be the Romans. Let's talk about the Russians. No, let's talk about the Russians. Let's talk about the Greeks. No, whatever. Of course, they have great food, though. A foreign entity takes America by force, and we no longer have an ability to defend ourselves, and they now are our bosses. And what happens if they say, we're going to uproot all of you American families, and we're going to send you to various other countries? They dispatriate you. They dispossess you of the land. Let me ask you. The first generation, when you're over in another land outside of America, you'll probably still speak English. You'll probably still wear white tennis shoes and Levi's. So your American culture will be a big part of who you are. But if you have kids in that new land, will they have the same sort of ethnicity as you did? It'll be diminished a bit. They know your language because you speak to them in English, but the new language, let's call it Germany, now they're speaking German. How about your kids' kids? Are they less American than you if they're living in another country? Do you see how that makes common sense? How is it that the Jews who are dispersed throughout all of the nations of the world, how did they stay uniquely Jewish, number one, keep a hold of the Hebrew language, number two, and stay beholden to their Bible, and even to this day, worship the Lord in a unique Jewish fashion? And they had been dispossessed of their land for 2,000 years. Do you see how that is a bona fide miracle? No other culture can that ever be said of. Well, back to our story. When the Romans, prophesying this angel as he heard it from the Lord, is telling Daniel, when the end shall come, 70 AD, when the Romans take over, it's going to be with a flood. The Jews are going to leave like a flood out of Jerusalem. Until the end of the war, desolations are determined. And then he, this is a pronoun, it has to refer back to the last noun, which would be the Antichrist. The Antichrist will confirm, and literally that word means enforce, a covenant with the many for 1 week. Now, the many there is the Jews. Right in your margin, Isaiah 28, verse 15. But that's exactly where Isaiah prophesies that at some point in the future, that the Jews will literally make a covenant with hell. Now, he's going to make a covenant for many for 70 weeks total, 69 of which will transpire from the decree to rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah is cut off. What did that leave us with? How many weeks? 1 week left. And this last week is more clearly detailed as beginning on a certain time when the Antichrist enforces a treaty with Israel. Now, we have in other areas, too, there's talking about sacrifices and oblations and such. You put the whole story together, what the Antichrist does, he makes a political deal with Israel for 7 years. One of the fruits of that deal is he lets them build a temple on the Temple Mount. That's the only place where Jews can build their temple. And guess how long he makes the contract for? 7 years, but look what happens. In the middle of the week, or the midst, or 3.5 years in, he shall bring an end to sacrifice and offering.